Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From Hollywood, California, the horror capital of the world, the Boulay Brothers, Creatures of the Night.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another death-defying episode of the Boulay Brothers' Creatures of the Night. This is Swan Thula, and of course I'm not alone. I'm always and forever joined by my sister in crime, the dark-sided Drakmorta. Drakmorta, darling, how are you tonight?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing very well myself. It's good to be back in the seat.
It is good to be back in the seat. The last time we were recording, we were not in the seat. We were traveling.
Getting rumbled and jumbled left and right and all the way around.
Yes, I hope everyone enjoyed my haunting of history, which was recorded from the fabulous side of the bed in the hotel room.
For those of you that don't know or didn't listen to the last episode, we were recording, at least in part, from our tour in the UK, which is the first installment of the Boulay Brothers Dracula Season 4 World Tour. So we were recording on the road, and who knows at what roadside, between what cities, where we were when that happened. But I do know this. Drac was recording in a hotel room on her phone, and I was suffering from motion sickness because the bus was just rumbling me all night. I was dizzy for days. Like, the next day, I was just, I'm like, why am I going to fall over? Like, I'm just sitting here, like, wobbling, like, I don't even know what.
Well, there was the extra horror for us because we had this sort of room that was in front of the bus. I guess it would be on the second level over where the driver would be.
Absolutely.
So there was a huge glass window. And when I say there was nothing between us and the window, there wasn't. And I just kept thinking, this driver's going to slam on the brakes and we're going to go flying out the front window into the middle of the street, just
the
laying
highway.
There dead.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, yes. Okay, so now I feel better because what I kept imagining was, you've seen those little clips in, like, you know, horror videos when a big tractor trailer is going down the highway and they underestimate the scale of the overpass and the whole top.
You didn't share this with me.
And I was like, that's going to be me. I am at the top of the tractor trailer. I'm just waiting to go under the wrong overpass and just get demolished.
Yeah.
Well, luckily that didn't happen. And here we are back in the seat again.
I'm glad you didn't tell me that because then I would have started obsessing about that.
Yeah.
No, I just kept thinking, I'm going to go flying out the front at any moment. Ignominiously flopping around through the air, dead on the street, and then with the headlights on you, and everyone comes out and looks at you like an idiot. I was like, wow.
It's not the death, it's not your body getting crushed, it's the ignominious embarrassment for Drac.
What a way to go.
Oh, I know, but it is good to be back. And when people have asked, like, oh my god, how was the tour? It must have been amazing. And it was, and it always is. But touring is crazy. Mm-hmm. Touring life is brutal in every way. My catch-all answer has been, well, the tour, how was it? It was a lot of everything. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work. It's a lot of stimulation. It's a lot of drag, filth, horror, and glamour.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people wrote in since we've been back, actually, and was telling us how amazing the show was. And they were super happy with it, super thrilled. So I wanted to say that here on air so the people that travel with us could hear that as well, because they did such a great job.
Oh, they did.
Just rave reviews across the board. I'm very proud of them. I'm proud of our team. I think everyone did a fantastic job, including you and us.
Thank you. You know what? I'm proud of me too.
You should be. You did a great job.
I really am proud of the whole team, especially the top four. Like I said, it's a lot, but I've been down that road before. We all have, and we know how grueling it can be, and we know how satisfying it can be. It really tests a person's mettle. It really tests you to the core. It's a game of endurance and discipline. And night after night, you have to be on and you have to be entertained. You have to be magic, baby. Just like Louisiana would say. You know, you just have to be magic every night. And they really were.
They were so well-behaved and professional. And Hosa was so self-sufficient. I was so proud of her and all of them, honestly.
Tens,
they were a joy.
Darling. Tens across the board.
Yes, they were a joy to travel with, and I'm looking forward to traveling with them in the U.S. And one of the things we did while we were in the U.K., and we put this on our story and people didn't know what it was we went to the Warhammer headquarters.
Yes.
What is that? So people ask, like, what is this place? What are these things? So tell us about it.
Okay, so I only know peripherally, but I love games and puzzles of all kinds. I think I've said this once before. I love a tabletop game. I love nerdy stuff. That's like my zone. So years ago, I started this game with friends of mine called Warhammer 40,000. And there's like another version of it set into a fantasy world. But this one is like in the future, like the super future. There's alien races. And essentially, it's like a gigantic war game of chess. And there's stores all over the world. But the world headquarters, as far as I know, is in Nottingham, England, where Games Workshop, which is the company that creates Warhammer, has their world headquarters. And it's called Warhammer World. And I have to commend you guys, both you and Ian, for trouncing and trolloping over the river and through the woods, yeah, past grandmother's house and into Warhammer World with me so I can get...
Well, so it was a highlight. I mean, yeah, we were happy to do it because, and if anyone didn't see any of the pictures from our stories, this place is incredible.
It's
because the
amazing.
Game is played with, like you said, it's like a chess game, but it's like with these little figures that are so, the detail on them is incredible. But I mean, these figures are like 1 inch tall, 2 inches tall.
Yeah, and there's just like a massive amount of detail and a massive amount of lore. So you create your own army, you collect the pieces, and you hand paint them. So there's like a high level of craft and artistry, but then you get to use them and you go battle head to head with nerds across the world and just play this amazing fantasy driven tactical game of war.
I think part of what's amazing is the art and the lore of it, right? Because the detail in these figures and the creativity it takes to paint them is so impressive.
It's so incredible.
And so at this place had like a museum of all of these figures, and it was insane. I mean, there would be like a huge warehouse that was just a fantasy world for all these little figures to live in and exist.
I mean, there was that one room and we thought we had seen it all, and you pay the extra $10 or whatever it was to go into the museum, which was absolutely worth it because the rest of the place is free. Like, you can go in and see examples of the games and the armies, and they basically sell every item that Games Workshop creates and manufactures. They sell there. So you can get every figure, every codex book, every paint color. It's an amazing array of products. But then the museum, it was just, I mean, that one room, there must have been 10,000. I don't know how many figures, but like building and structures like 10, 20 feet tall that filled a room. And it's just like this massive display of war ridden landscape.
It gave me like total vertigo after a minute. It was like looking at so much and it just kept getting bigger and bigger that I was like, what the hell? But I also... So it's like when we first walked in, we were on the other side of the room and I was like, where's Ian at? And he came across on the other side and he was doing something with his phone. And I just kept picturing in my head,
oh my God, yes.
Him falling off of the corner into the map and how it was like just a total 80s movie where he destroyed the whole thing.
Totally.
And I couldn't stop laughing. But anyway, that was kind of fun to go there. And then another thing I wanted to mention about the UK was all the amazing gifts that we got. We got a lot of very thoughtful gifts. And I know a lot of people in the UK that came to the tour listened to the podcast as well.
Oh, so many.
Yeah, so they picked up on so many little things that they brought us gifts that related to a lot of topics that we talked about on the podcast. So I just want to say thank you. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, they were so thoughtful. And we've said this before, like we get the best gifts in the UK. They're so appreciated. And then they travel with you. So it becomes a memento of your experience and where you were and how your creation, the show, touched this person. Mm-hmm. And some of them are handwritten letters or handcrafted dolls. And I mean, just an array of so many cool things. But my favorite thing, and it was a gift to you, but it was in reaction to a listener listening to Creatures of the Night. Someone had located the read-along book and little 45 record from the Haunted Mansion, the one that you have referenced so many times from your childhood. And I try to picture in my mind, and I'm like, I've never seen this thing. I don't know what it looks like. And when we opened it up, you were like, that's it. Like, that is it. That was so special.
She repaired the damage to the inner child, and now I'm a goody cutie.
Oh my God.
And I don't like horror anymore. No, I'm kidding.
A cutie nicey.
A cutie nicey. Well, anyways, thank you to everyone out there that brought us gifts. And a lot of your gifts made it back to our home or our office, and they're in cabinets and stuff already. So you'll be happy to know that.
And when our feet hit the ground in LA, they hit the ground running. I don't think we were in the country for more than 36 hours or something, and we were already filming something very special with Fangoria.
I felt like a fucking dunce too when we were in there, because we once I told them, when they asked, I was like, I don't have time to read the script. I'm telling you now, I don't. So get a huge teleprompter and we'll work it out. And we walked in, and how big was that teleprompter? I mean, it was the size of my hand.
Yeah.
I could not see it,
it
to save my
so
life.
It was so tiny. I know. And I felt for you.
I hate that when I feel like it's like, you're doing something cool and you feel cool, and then you go there and then suddenly you're in like a John Candy movie in the 80s, right? And you knock the whole set over. Like, that's what it felt like. Because we're like standing behind the curtain, and they're like, go ahead and come out. And we walk out and we're all glamorous, and we look pretty hot that
day. No, we look great. I mean, okay, that picture that you posted, that was an untouched, unfiltered photo. And
no filter,
you
no
looked
anything.
Incredible.
Thank you. I think we both looked incredible that day. I put a little extra effort in that day.
It showed, honey.
I know. It looks like
fantastic.
I filtered the hell out of my face, and I did not. So
that's right.
Anyway.
The magic of glamour and makeup drawing.
So we walk out, and I walk up to the thing, and I can't see anything. I mean, nothing. And it's a whole thing. Ian has to run out and buy giant, like, 1930s cue cards and write them out. And I mean, the letters were the size of my hand. I realize now I cannot try it anymore. It is over. I'm going to get some prescription contacts.
Yes. Woo. Cue the audience. Uproarious applause. This is going to make my life so much easier during production, too, because we do bring in the gigantic flat screen television. Maybe we can actually.
Well, I always also think when the competitors, right, especially when they're new and they're not used to it, we have them stand on the stage after, or we'll have them come up to the judges. And I get up out of my chair and get like 2 inches from their face because I want to see all the details. I want to see all their makeup.
Look,
everything.
I've done this enough times with you. I know what's actually happening, because what
they must be
what
like,
they're thinking
what?
Is like, oh my God, Drac is so dead
but
serious
I am.
About this.
I
makeup.
Really do want to see all of it.
But yeah, but they don't know that you literally have to go up to them like Ogre, like with her one giant
oh
eye.
Oh my God. I said that yesterday too. I was like, give me the eye. I want to see.
It's my turn. Give me the eye.
Anyway, so hopefully I don't look like a total flop dud when the
you
thing
don't.
Comes out.
Listen, I have to tell you this. You handled it well. It was a little cringy in the moment, but I feel like you made light of it. I know you felt mortified, but I have to tell you, you handled it very well. You did.
Well, thank you. We'll see.
And how many takes did it take for us to get through it once we got going?
Well, that was the thing.
Just the one, darling.
It was one, and I hope that's because we nailed it and not because they were all
like, get him out of here. Never
Anyways,
again.
We'll see what happened. Oh, one other thing I wanted to talk about really quickly was that the Belay Brothers Dragula season 2 and 3 will officially be out on Shudder on April 18th. Yes, so many people have been asking, and now you know all English-speaking territories. You can watch the Belay Brothers Dragula season 2 and 3 till your heart's content. And I also have this little spoiler to tell you about that we are officially remastering season 1. It is in the process right now, and it will be released maybe a month or two later because we're still working on it. Yeah, so all 3 seasons will be out. It'll be joining season 4 and Resurrection. So all of the Belay Brothers Dragula content will finally live under one roof on one platform.
The official Dragula Library.
Yes.
All in one place. Very exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. And congratulations for finally getting them all together under the same roof.
Congratulations to you too.
Thank you.
And you know what? We should also congratulate one other person who breaks her little fingers to make Dragula the beautiful creation that it is. And let's introduce her to the podcast right now.
Carlos, welcome.
Carlos, welcome to the show. I'm kidding. Carlos produces our podcast with us and records everything. And little did you know, it's not just me, Drac, and Ian sitting here in the darkness of the creatures of the night. Carlos is also in close reach. So Maybe one day we'll hear Carlos's voice.
I think so.
But for now, I wasn't going to introduce Carlos. Of course, I am talking about our sister in crime, our Sith apprentice, and our co-host and producer, Ms. Ian DeVogler. Ian, welcome to the show, and congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. Congratulations to you two both.
Thank you, darling.
Welcome back to the United States.
Thank you. It's a little difficult to write these cue cards with these broken fingers, but I'm making do. I think that's actually why you couldn't read the cue cards. You're like, girl, her finger's all broken. I can't read this.
You saved the day.
Just like Jenna Ortega's from X. But we'll get there.
We'll get there, girl. There's this fun little game that the Boulets and I do every time we sit down for the Creature Feature movie review, where if it's a new film that no one's ever seen, we all sit down for our meeting. We're like, so, did you watch the movie? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I did. Oh, good. And like, no one wants to talk about what is happening. We're all just like dying to talk about
it.
Yeah,
because we want to preserve our natural reactions with each other. So we pretend. We do like this weird little social dance game.
We're all trying to see. We're like, did they like it? Did they hate it? I don't know. Oh, and Ian's like, what? Oh, really? Did you, okay.
Oh, so you thought that? Oh, okay.
Cute.
Yeah, same girl. Mm-hmm.
So are you still jet lagged?
I don't know if we afford ourselves the luxury of being jet lagged. I think that it's more like what Swan said. We hit the ground running 36 hours later. There we are filming with Fangoria. I feel pretty good. And honestly, I got to say that part of the reason for that is this tour was the biggest, the best, and the baddest, but also just kind of amazing in a lot of ways. Like, I think for all of the trials and tribulations, there were also a lot of really incredible moments. The three of us got to have fun. The cast were really great. There were some awesome moments just on stage, too. The tour was fucking rad.
It was good, right?
Was really good.
What was your favorite part?
Oh, I'm trying to think what my favorite
part. Well, some of your favorite parts.
I think one of my favorite parts, honestly, is we gave the whole cast names. They were
okay. So let me preface this by saying, when you're on tour, your mind goes to weird places.
Oh, like, truly, you're not even on this mental
different
plane.
Different stuff happens. You're on
somehow
like another planet.
We were in a trailer park. I don't know why.
Oh yeah, mama.
Yeah. So do you want to deliver?
Sure. So we did a little test run of a live Creatures of the Night segment on stage, which I think the three of us did pretty fucking great.
Yeah, it was really fun.
I was so scared. I was so nervous.
You were great.
Yes. Oh, thank you. I really loved it. But one of the things we did was we did news from the tour bus. And so we debuted everyone's new trailer park names. First up, we had Hoso Teratoma became Lil Hosey May.
Lil Hosey May.
And Lil Hosey May stuck. Like, you know, even the other competitors were like, oh, that's Lil Hosey May. She's in the back, blah, blah, blah. Like, it was like with
it's
us
her
for
new
a
real
while.
Name.
Like,
well,
they
I really, know it.
They started calling her Hosey Butt Chain May because like two of her
they
costumes.
Have to ruin it.
Well, it was great.
I don't know. I can fit that into my trailer park fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, maybe she's a dancer on the weekends. You know, she's
dancer on the weekends, cue cards on the weekdays. That was me. We had Saint, who was Sissy Lou. We also had our current reigning drag super monster, Durla. And then, of course, you can't mess with perfection. Sigourney Beaver stayed Sigourney Beaver.
That was her trailer park name.
And I knew
and
we had
name.
Lost our fucking minds when we were like, the last performance, we're all in the back. Dolly's getting ready to come up, and we're in the back cheering like, Durla, Durla, Durla. And he's loving it. He's loving it. He's just like,
everybody
yes.
was on board for the trailer fantasy by the time we got to the last stop.
I find a trailer pejorative, and I really think you should find
How
another
dare
way
you.
To...
Ignominious trailer.
I think you're right, Jack. Educate us.
I'm just here to educate.
I will say, there was one other moment. I think this was like just for me, but speaking of Warhammer 40,000, we went to Warhammer World, and we learned all about all the different factions and races, and Drakmorta told us that her favorite race is the Slaanesh, who are these perversion-based demons. And so we're sitting in the tour bus, and we're just texting back and forth, and I texted a picture of Slut Pop, and I said, this is the Slaanesh war anthem. And I just... Mama, I'm funny. So I just started laughing.
Now, Ian's bed coffin is on the other side of a very thin wall. So he sends us the Slut Pop thing. This is Slaanesh's like war music. And then all I hear is like, giggle, giggle.
Like, I'm like, he is really cracking himself up over there.
Mama, everyone loves their own brand.
Yeah, I think overall, too, I totally agree with you. The tour was awesome. I mean, we've done 12 shows. There's 24 coming for the U.S., Ooh. And there's even more to be added in, like, Australia and beyond. So We're just getting started, ladies.
Totally. I feel like the tour had this kind of strange quality to it sometimes. Of course, every show is special and unique in its own way, and all the meet and greets are fantastic, but there is almost this sort of like multiverse blurring that happens where we're sitting at the airport after the tour is finished, and we're like, okay, let's talk about each stop and really trying to soak in like, okay, what made this one great? What are the interesting points? And for some, I'm like, mama, I literally don't remember this day or this stretch of days at all. Like, totally. Just blink and it's over.
Remember the first night when Ian was like in a movie and he went downstairs and tried to journal and write down what happened?
Oh my God.
That was adorable.
It was so cute. And then he never did it again.
I did it one more time. One more.
But like, I know why you did it now, because at the end when we were all trying to remember what happened and so what was hard. Each night. Yeah. Yeah, so I get why you were trying to do that. I mean, I also get why you didn't do it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Listen, I love handwritten notes. And also, I got some handwritten notes this time. So thank you for everyone who gave me gifts. Oh my God, thank you so much.
You got a lot of stuff. People loved you on the tour.
I was gagged. Like, seriously, like, wig pulled all the way back to the nape of my neck, gagged at the amount of gifts and just love from people who listen to the podcast and who have seen the show or have seen me on the show. Thank you all so much. I was in tears, literally. I was in my bunk crying. It was great.
That's cute. You're welcome.
Yes.
So you too were impressed with the competitors, right? With the stars of the Blade Brothers Dragula season 4.
100%. I thought they all represented themselves on stage like stars and off stage like stars.
I got to know them even a level more. Even Saint, who we know really well. Yeah. I feel like I got to know Saint in a deeper level. And it's weird. Like, I don't know if you all think this or not, but I feel like everyone has their sort of storyline challenge for the season when they come to compete, because no one's perfect at everything. Everyone has some sort of challenge. I feel like this tour almost perfected whatever maybe they needed to develop further. I feel like that happened on this tour.
And yeah, I think the experience of being on the tour and night after night, you perfect what you've brought. In the example of Saint was like playing with the performances and like changing it up on the fly.
Yeah.
And almost experimental and being like, oh, I got them in my claws, but watch me do this, mama. Bam. And
well, like, that's how you get better, screaming. Right? That's how all of us improve the things that we need to improve in.
Yeah. It's interesting because we saw the inklings of that when Saint was with us on the season 3 tour. Because on one of the last tour stops, Saint done this number 6 or 7 times. She looks across the audience, sees this bar in kind of the back area, and is like, I'm going to go through the crowd. I'm going on to the bar. Crowd goes fucking nuts.
And it was such a good idea that Madeline went on next. And then she said, well, shit, if it worked for Saint, I'm going to jump on the bar.
I almost died when Saint went and did that. And everyone's like, yes, Saint, work. And then you saw Madeline's wheels turning and she's like, anyway. And then she went right out and did it. I was dying.
I couldn't believe it.
But also, speaking of everyone, Sigourney too, just so professional tight and together. Such a pleasure to tour with. Nailed everything. Never complained.
Durla, the same thing. Like, not only killing it on stage, like, that wasn't even in question. It was, I don't know what a team player it was, just to be on the bus and part of the touring mechanism, just active and present. And I think their history just kind of really helped them be that present for this type of tour too. So it was all the nightly performances, but then all the ways that he like kind of stepped up and really became a big help during the behind the scenes stuff.
You know, for us, the world that we come from, it's like you put your head down, you work hard. With live performances, we want people to put in the work. We struggle behind the scenes. We sweat. That's sort of the world that we come from. And when Dali, who has now won the show, first thing starts helping unload the tour bus and the supplies and like roadie tasks, it made me really proud.
I know,
like,
my heart swelled too.
He didn't have to do that, but the fact that he just did it, it really impressed me and made me feel like
100%. I want to circle back to Hoso for a minute too, because one of her performances, the song became the anthem to the entire tour. For those of you out there listening, it's by a group called Mother Mother. The song is called Body, and I'm going to insist that it stays on the tour because I love the performance. I love the song. I'm obsessed. But Hoso, almost every night, and this was not like a planned thing, we're backstage listening to the show, and you get into the rhythm of the show. You know what's coming. But then all of a sudden, the crowd bursts. Hoso. Hoso.
Yeah.
Hoso. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God. She electrified the audiences over and over to the point where they were chanting her name.
For me, I think about some of these competitors, where they came from when we first met them. Like Saint. Saint was very raw when we first met him. And even Hoso was so young. And to see them transform and become these like powerhouse stars, it just makes me very proud.
I do have one last thing. One of my favorite moments that doesn't include the three of us gooning out at the Warhammer store. The final performance, the Boulets are on stage doing this Frankenstein number, and the crowd is just living. And I'm backstage with the other cast members, the final four of the season, and they're getting ready for the curtain call. And all of us, we just open the curtain a little bit, and all of us are just, like screaming for the Boulets. And it was just kind of this moment of, I could really feel the camaraderie of the cast, just really in full force. And all of us were kind of like doing our own versions of the dance moves. And it was just kind of this moment of like, wow, I really love all the people that we're touring with. This is my family.
That moment was so fucking cool because we were in Bristol, a place that we had never been before. Earlier that day, if the sun is out and snowing at the same time, I'm like, what is happening? And then I didn't know what to expect from that night. Again, it's a new city, but it was a sold out show. They are packed to the gills, like super punk rock electric energy is like pulsing through the crowd. And by the time we got to that last Frankenstein number where the angle grinder gets caught up in my costume and I'm just like, rip it up and just starts throwing a waterfall of sparks all over Drac, all over the crowd. They go insane. And now to know that you guys are like screaming in the wings too, just what a great culmination and an ending to the first chapter of the tour.
It feels good to know that. I don't know if you feel this, because I feel like with us, there's this sort of monolithic energy that people just think, especially other competitors from whatever season, that we don't need to hear anything, or we don't need validation or a compliment or anything like that. And it's cool. Like, I've totally grown used to that and I'm okay with it. So, but when it does happen, it goes a long way, you know?
I totally agree.
Yeah,
it
happened similarly at Bushwig when we were there this last year. And like Madeline and Saint and everyone came up and was like helping us get our props on stage. Like, I was like, it just felt really good.
It
you
did
know?
Feel really good. Yeah. I felt like part of the family that I helped create. But oftentimes I feel like we're removed from
that.
Me
too. Absolutely. And I don't blame anyone for it. I get why it is. I would probably feel that way too if I came in the fold in the similar way that they do.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, I think it's time to move on to the news.
Ian, darling.
While the Boulets and myself were away from the office on our UK leg of the Boulet Brothers Dragula Season 4 World Tour, manifesting magic amongst the Manchester misfits and summoning spirits with all the Scotland sissies, the worlds of Hollywood and horror continued their death march towards terror, with anticipated releases shambling onto screens and new nightmares announced to keep our future selves up at night. First up, not to be outdone with the latest emo-core reboot of The Dark Knight, The Hollywood Reporter broke the news of a modern film reboot of the original 90s goth vigilante Back from the Dead, Hungry for Revenge. That's right, I'm talking about The Crow, this time with Bill Skarsgård of recent Pennywise fame as the mascaraed Crow herself. A lot of buzz has been generated in the comic and horror spaces by this announcement, alongside the reveal that Grammy-nominated singer FKA Twigs would be joining the cast as The Crow's fiancé. The film's director, Rupert Sanders, most known for Snow White and the Huntsman and the Ghost in the Shell live-action movie, has stated that FKA Twigs would be co-starring in the film, leading some to believe that her character will play a larger part than that of her comic book origin.
Very interesting, and goths across the world go insane. I mean, The Crow is so iconic.
Well, speaking of Miss Bill Skarsgård, it seems as though HBO wants a slice of 2017's horror It Girl, with the recent rumblings that a new prequel series titled Welcome to Derry is reportedly in the works for the streaming service. Details are limited at this point, but sources close to the production have stated that the series will likely explore the origins of Derry, as well as the 27-year curse that brings Pennywise the Dancing Clown to the sleepy main town. At this point, no talent or production crew have been announced for the project, and strangely, the project has not been officially announced as being greenlit, but multiple sources have confirmed that a writer's room has been assembled and the project is actively being worked on.
Exciting. You never know. Like, I'll read about movies that are like, it's coming, we're working on it, and then it just totally falls out of development or a director leaves, you never hear about it again.
Goes to development hell, totally.
They've had this He-Man and the Masters of the Universe movie, live action, but it was like a big budget thing. In the works now, off and on, for maybe like 5 or 6 years. But I did read recently that it, for sure, for real, is happening. But they're trying to give it like a comedic spin, which I'm really pissed off about. Well, they want to lean into the Orko of it all. And I'm like, that's, they're like, we want to lean into how silly it was. And we're going to have characters like Fisto on there. And I was like,
okay. Yes, Fisto me.
they need to wash away the horror of the last live action Masters of the Universe, because that was not it.
Oh, mama, I have some Googling to do. What?
Oh, it was...
No.
They're making a D&D movie right now, and I am holding my breath for it, because a part of me is like, oh my God, yes, swords and magic and the epic quest of all of your friends. But then I also remember that a lot of D&D is like gooning out with your friends, and it's kind of dumb sometimes, because it's just your friends having fun. I'm like, how does that translate? Because one group's comedy is not the same as another group's.
True. Yeah. And is it going to be about the game, about players playing it, or is it about the world like it's a fantasy thing?
My guess is it's going to be about the world. So we won't see players.
That's weird, because it's pretty generic.
That'd be stupid.
Again, why I'm holding my breath. I'm like, it could be anything.
Yeah, it's
I'm not going to say generic, though. I think it's like the quintessential. Like,
okay, maybe that's a better way to say it. But you know what I mean? Like, all sort of fantasy, World of Warcraft, Lord of the Rings, like all the same kind of fantasy world where there's elves and dwarves and...
Well, I don't know, because even doing a...
No, there are elves and dwarves.
Wait, are you sure? Hold on, listen. Hold on, what?
I can vouch, there are elves and dwarves.
In my recent rewatch of The Lord of the Rings, I was like, wow, this basic. But then I'm like, oh, well, right, because this the blueprint. Like,
right.
Yeah, totally.
No Slaanesh slut pop in the Shire yet. From billion-dollar box office smashes all the way to crowdfunded corners of the internet, upcoming found footage horror film Shelby Oaks has officially become the most highly funded Kickstarter horror project in the platform's history, after blowing past its initial goal of $250,000, with current backing pledged at $1.4 million in 5 weeks of the Kickstarter's short life. The film will be the first original feature for writer-director Chris Stuckman, who has stated that the entirety of the Kickstarter pool will be going directly into the production.
That's exciting.
I was gagged. I mean,
that is exciting.
I don't know how to feel about the film itself. I love found footage, and I think that the film has a lot of potential. But $1.4 million from a Kickstarter is crazy.
It's got my dark wheels turning.
Oh, yeah?
No.
Best of luck, Miss Stuckman. And finally, for fans of Netflix's choose-your-own-adventure-style project, Black Mirror Bandersnatch, the streaming giant has just announced that their latest interactive feature will sit squarely in the horror genre, aptly titled Choose or Die. The announcement also came with a trailer for the project that showcased the tech horror aspects of the film, but left all aspects of the interactive nature of the project out, assumedly to keep the choices and their deadly consequences a secret until the film releases on April 15th.
I'm confused, because I thought for sure Black Mirror Bandersnatch auditioned for season 4.
Oh, she's actually going to come back in season 5. Get ready, mama.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for those interesting news tidbits.
Damn.
You take it out to
cool.
No, they were good.
No.
Came out wrong.
That was fun. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to be digging into this episode's creature feature movie review.
Stay tuned.
Attention, misfits, mutants, and outcasts. The Boulay Brothers want you to join the cult now by visiting BouleyBrothersDragula.com, where everything from the world of the Boulay Brothers can be found. Be sure to sign up for the newsletter for insider updates, learn more about upcoming projects, and access tons of Boulay Brothers and Boulay Brothers Dragula exclusive merchandise. Visit us now at BouleyBrothersDragula.com. Do it or die.
Welcome back to the Crypt Uglies, and welcome to the Boulay Brothers Creature Feature Movie Review. For this episode's review, we've chosen to watch and critique A24's X, directed by Ty West. The film is about a group of actors who set out to make an adult film in rural Texas under the noses of their reclusive hosts. But when the elderly couple catches their young guests in the act, the cast finds themselves in a desperate fight for their lives. So, what were your first impressions?
My first impression was, this is so fun. I was so kind of tickled, like just sitting there. I enjoyed the whole thing. And for a long time, probably for a good, I don't know, 2/3 of the film, I'm like, this is just hot. Like, I'm like, the cast is like girl, super sizzling. Sexy. I'm like, I love sex mixed with fear. I'm like, this is checking off so many of Swanthula's boxes. I'm like, this is just really fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will go back a step and say my first impressions upon seeing the trailer were tens across the board. I love the Texas Chainsaw Massacre inspired setting. A Texas girl myself, I love daytime horror, and the trailer also kind of has that feeling of fun, but then also immediately switches into something that's darker. And I was like, okay, this has me written all over it, so let's see. And similarly, from moment one, the film opens with this shot through a barn door, giving the impression of the aspect ratio of like the 1970s. And then they push the camera forward, revealing the widescreen. I was like, mama, I'm there.
Not just the widescreen though, because I found that so effective. And I was like, it just gets my gears immediately. Mm-hmm. When you zoom and it goes to the widescreen, then you see that it's not just a house. It's a murder scene. And
yeah. With cop cars
all over. And I'm like, that was so good.
Yeah.
When I first saw that, I was like, are we going to do this the whole movie? Like I did. I thought for a minute. I was like, not a square.
You're like, not the Snyder cut. Come on.
Wow.
But, you know, my first impression, it was really enjoyable. It was fun. It was not super heady, which I'm glad that this was an easy, not long, not complicated watch of a movie.
I totally agree with you. But mama, for a movie that I think we all agree is not super heady and is not overly drawn out, kind of like highbrow horror, it did what it came to do, which was be like, oh, it's just a movie. Why don't you just do this? Oh, you want tits? You want ass? You want blood? You want gore? Here it is. Get ready. I was like, oh, I love this movie. Yeah. It was so smart, too.
Almost for the first chunk of it, I was like, wait, I was into it. I liked it. But I was like, wait, is this a horror movie? Or is this not a horror movie? Because I was like, scary. Yeah. You know?
Very atmospheric, but not scary. And when it made me jump, did I jump out of my
seat? Yeah. We'll get there, girl.
Yeah. I mean, I thought too, when you first saw and I forget which character it was that was swimming back to the pier with the alligator coming behind.
Oh my God.
Just felt very Maxine '90s.
And Maxine like, Minx.
Yeah. Well, it felt very 90s and just that kind of horror movie, and I was into it. I thought it was great.
Yeah. It was that moment, though, too, that aerial shot. Mm-hmm. Part of the premise is they're making an adult film, but they don't want it to be smut. This young filmmaker wants it to be artistic and have sex in it, but still be artistic. And I kind of felt like the whole film was almost like a weird mirror of that, where they were making a horror movie, but it was artistic. And it really was kind of artistic.
Yeah.
But when we had that aerial shot of Mia Goth as Maxine Minx, because she plays two characters in this movie,
spoilers,
swimming in the lake, and then that alligator just comes into play, and it's like this weird aerial breakout
so
of just
beautiful
shape and dread. And I'm like, ooh.
Well, that's why we love A24, right? They always do things outside of the box and make this sort of artistically inspired films.
Artistically artistic for the sake of art, mama. Yeah. But I also felt like it was able to look itself in the mirror and say, okay, yes, we're going to do artistic, but we're also not going to take it too seriously.
Yes.
They were very meta in the sense of the character of the director, RJ, he says something to the effect of, oh, well, I don't have to film everything in order because I'll just cut it up in editing anyway. And I'm really inspired by this French experimental film style where I can just intercut two images together. Cut two, we're doing that film editing trick the whole time.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I love movies that aren't afraid to take risks. And there were so many risks throughout from a filmmaking standpoint.
So was it scary?
Yes.
Okay.
At a certain point, right?
So what did you think was scary about the movie, and what, aside from jumping out of your seat and scaring the hell out of me,
how many times?
You scared me. There's two times next to you is going to complain because she went, she scared me bad. I was like, oh my God. She was like,
it was like a cheap jump scare, but I think it was really
like the light bulb.
No,
it was when
Maxine goes to the house the first time and has a glass of lemonade, and she's making her way back, and she's like, what a strange kind of ugly experience. You can feel it. It was like on her, like the Southern heat. Right.
Ooh,
and then she just like
runs into Wayne.
And I was like, I mean, when I tell you, I jump up out of the chair, out of my skin and across the board, it was just crazy.
Then when one of the characters was coming out of the cabin and then the director guy like reaches out, you think it's the granny for a second. I don't know if you remember that mm-hmm. you jumped on that too.
Yeah.
And I was
it really got me.
Sit somewhere else.
It well, you use the word too, because this movie has a genuine GHFH, which is the ultimate granny hag from hell.
Oh, yes. Are we getting into that?
Let's go, because I have some highbrow horror things to talk about.
So, for those at home that haven't watched it, this is a spoiler, and I can't believe it. I literally think they listened to the podcast and made this movie. Because who's the antagonist? A granny hag from hell. Yes. Again.
Kind of like the ultimate granny hag from hell.
The granny hag from hell.
Okay, but here's what's worse. This granny is not a mystical force. She doesn't have powers. She's just a granny.
Granny hag from hell.
And I'm like, okay, surely she has powers or she's a spirit or something. No, she just olds up and kills them.
Yes.
And I'm like, how is this happening?
Okay, yes, but mama, it's not like she's like throwing people around. Like all the kills are very realistic to me.
Except for the pitchfork.
She would not have had the force to stick that pitchfork through those holes.
It wasn't even the force. It was perfectly orchestrated.
Oh, okay.
It was like so unrealistic. And I'm not even usually that voice, but I was like, girl.
Girl. As listeners of the podcast may know, when I love a movie, I will excuse her bullshit. So, yes, I do think that that scene was the most, let me just look through the eye hole what's happening here. But I feel like that is one of a huge list of homages to the genre. For me, I'm like, the movie clearly loves horror. They very openly are like, oh, well, what about Psycho? Cut to we're showering with the Psycho scene. And then There's the car in the lake. And the whole thing is a Texas Chainsaw homage. So I looked at that. I was like, oh, there has to be the one dumb character who's like, let me A, walk around barefoot in this barn. B, look through this little peephole. I'm like, mama, it's not a glory hole. Like, don't be looking.
And doing it looking so good.
Ooh, like the,
now I'm gonna throw my lot in, and this guy Martin Henderson as the Studley Wayne was looking snacky.
Oh my god, I live because he's such a snacky.
Oh, I love it. Oh, he's so skeezy and sleazy, and there was this undercurrent of queerness too. Like the girls were going at it, and they were filming. He's like, feel how hard my cock is, and he's talking to the young filmmaker, and he puts the guy's hand on his crotch. And it wasn't homosexual at all, but it was very just sexual.
No homo on that one, right?
Well, no homo on that one, but yes homo on our granny hag from hell.
Oh, totally. She was like a total lesbian.
There was queerness.
Well, no, not
all
really.
Over.
I guess she was just like a nymphomaniac, right?
I guess.
Okay, clearly people in Hollywood are scared to death of getting old, right? Because why is a granny so scary to you? Like, I don't get it.
I think that is because the three people at this table, even though listeners may not think this, are pretty well adjusted in the head. I thought that was one of the great strengths of the movie is like, oh, the real horror is getting old.
They're like, a naked granny is the most terrifying thing on earth. I'm like, is it like, you're going to get old one day, Sherry.
Well, exactly.
This you.
Well, it's not just that. They looked crazy.
Oh, they were old,
they were scary.
They were
looking.
But still, I mean, I don't know, it's weird. It goes to show the fact that they used that as a scare tactic, and it effectively worked, because in the theater people were cringing like when they were having sex, when the two older people were, and you're like,
oh yeah,
it's
let's not
weird.
Skip the fact that he has like one tooth and there's like boils on their face. I mean, they look rough,
but I will say I had a fabulous viewing experience, because I saw this in a theater. Myself and my boyfriend were the only people in the theater.
Really?
Oh,
like,
wow.
Literally.
So it's doing well.
Oh, yeah. Doing real good, mama. $10 million at the box office. I'm not in the camp of like, oh my God, her old body is so scary. But I did love the fact that it's like, oh, you're young and you have everything that you could ever want. And there's all these conversations about like, oh, well, we're young and we should do these things because it's fun and you got to use it while it lasts. And then the real horror, the real monster is just getting older. Of all the monsters in the world, the one that comes for us all is death. And
they used it effectively, because the truth is, audiences, especially nowadays, you don't see older people on TV or in movies hardly at all. Like, we talked about that. I mean, there's a joke online about the Golden Girls, right? Because like the Golden Girls are a certain age and you look at them as grannies. Now, they just made the Sex and the City movie and they don't look like grannies, and they're the same age that the Golden Girls were when they were on the air. It's an effective tool. Like, it's not their fault that society sees the elderly this way, but it does kind of make you think, like, is that how deteriorated we are? Like, that we think it's terrifying?
Well, even Jamie Lee Curtis recently just said in an interview, she's like, I'm so tired of the concept of anti-aging. She's like, I'm aging gracefully. She's like, I am not afraid of being old.
I just think it's funny. That's what I think is interesting about just drag and makeup and all that in general. It's all a joke. You could change what anybody looks like with enough materials and makeup and tricks.
Which I think is a perfect segue into, for those who don't know, because I did not know until sitting down today, Swanthula broke this one out.
But I didn't know either because I was just like reading up on the film. So we all experienced it and didn't realize it, that Mia Goth, who is smoking hot, like she plays the main character, the protagonist, Maxine Minx, who's a great lead girl.
Yeah.
She's the it girl. She's the X Factor, but she's abusing cocaine and she's like hypersexual and she's really young and very much that quintessential, heavily blue eyeshadowed 1979s girl.
Yeah.
Like just so hot, just seated in the power of her sexuality. But she also plays Pearl, who is the granny hag from hell.
Yeah.
She plays both characters. Heavily prostheticed and aged with all the effects makeup to the point where she's unrecognizable. And that adds another layer. Like you guys were saying earlier, it's so simple. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It wears itself right on its sleeve. But there's some layers in there.
Oh my
like,
God,
especially if we're talking about like sexuality and repression, which I think was a lot. There was like this religious voice in the background on the TV always saying like, you know, Jesus and repent. And they're like, you're not innocent. And all these kind of things. And like, you're flaunting it in front of me, that young body and all the, like, get it while you can and all these kind of things. But to know that like, that is everyone's destiny if you have the luxury of living a full life. And she's playing an old and young version of herself.
Well, I was shocked that it was the same character. Although I did notice something. Her physicality was right on. I didn't see through that. Her voice I saw through because she did kind of mask it and was like, husky. But there's something that betrayed her as something was off. But I did not know that that was the same character.
Unclockable. Totally.
Yeah, I was completely gagged.
I did think that the scares really came in late. Like to circle back to Drax's question, was it scary? And I was like, well, kind of, yes. But we sort of got there because most of it was almost an atmospheric, hypersexualized stage setting,
Setting
for the violence that was going to come. But I was like, is something supernatural about to happen? And I kept thinking that like over and over and over. But we spilled the tea right at the beginning. Nope, she's just a granny who snaps and just like killing people left and right. But I always felt like we were on the cusp of something amazing, like and supernatural about to happen.
I got that feeling a little bit too. And I don't think there is anything supernatural happening, but I do think that there are, I'll go with cosmic elements to the film, even with the scene where Pearl stabs RJ and she's basically orgasming while she's kind of spraying blood all over. And then his blood goes onto the headlights of the car and she's bathed in this red light.
Mm.
And I was like, mama, this is some blood moon witchcraft level ecstasy here.
Yeah. And they did keep showing the full moon. Like they showed it several times. Let's talk about Jenna Ortega just again, because we've all seen her recently in Five Cream.
Five Cream.
And as the character of Lorraine, she definitely gives a performance that plants her squarely in the space of Scream Queen again.
Oh, yeah.
Just so amazingly believable in her.
She's our first
sweet
scream
little,
of the
film,
too.
Her horrified face is so insane.
Was so effective. I bought that hook, line, and sinker. I was like, wow, she took me there.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I love the way that they position Lorraine as the final girl. She is the innocent one. She is kind of the odd person out. And then by the end, when she escapes from the cellar, and then unceremoniously, bam, just shotgun to the face. I was like,
that was scary too.
That was
the way that she was shot.
Yeah.
And also the fact that she wasn't dead and she was like kind of breathing.
And then it
like
scared the old man to death.
Yeah.
Ooh, girl.
X is wild.
X do be wild.
It was good.
Yeah, it was fun. I think all three of us would encourage anyone to watch it.
It was like a fun, easy watch. Entertaining, not overly complicated.
I think we all really enjoyed it. I know personally, I loved it. I mean, from moment one to moment done, I had a giant grin on my face. I loved it. I do agree that you can watch it and you don't have to think too hard about it. It's great. But I think that there are a lot of really deep and meaningful themes in the film, which for me, that pings off on a lot of receptors. It's easy to watch, but if you really want to dig in, you can. Loved that.
I'm going to make Granny Hags from Hell the movie. We're all going to make it together.
Yes.
And there's not going to be any kind of secret message or anything. Whatever you see is what you get.
Right.
So just be prepared.
Satanic grannies.
Satanic grannies.
There's no underlying hints. There's nothing about age, beauty, nothing. It's just dumb and amazing. Get ready.
I do have to give them one moment, though. And I suspended my disbelief. I didn't care because I was like, yes, when Granny bitch slapped the blonde into the lake and then she gets chomped by an alligator.
I'm like, Sherry, you can barely walk down. How did you push her in the water?
Okay. Well,
it was so good.
Let's talk for just 2 seconds about it. Oh, my God. Did I love this movie? Oh, my God. Did I love this movie? I felt like that death to me was one of the homages and also the subversions of the genre, because it's a slasher. The whole time is who's going to get killed in what ways. And then you have this blonde character, Bobby Lynn, who for all intents and purposes should be one of the first outs. It should be her, and the virgin should live. The virgin dies immediately, and her death suddenly... it's a monster movie. It's Creature from the Black Lagoon. It's Jaws. I'm like, oh my God, out of nowhere.
I love the alligators for some reason. I thought that was such a cool, it's cheesy, but it's kind of cool. And it's such a great way to dispose of bodies.
Little pets.
There is one other thing we should talk about. When you saw the guy in the basement, when Jenna Ortega gets locked in the basement and she sees a guy, which you thought was the...
I thought it was the RJ guy, but then you see his corpse in front of the car and I'm like, this must be the driver of that bug that was in the
also lake. If that was RJ, she wouldn't have fucked the other guy. You know, there's that too to think about.
Totally.
Also, when Kid Cudi wakes up in the middle of the night to go to the kitchen or whatever, he's drinking from a milk carton that has a missing persons on it, and it's him.
Wow. No, really?
Which is like moments before you see him in the basement.
Because they made another reference to him.
The old man says, like that other hippie, the other one, they threw in the lake or whatever.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't him, but I didn't see the milk cart. That's genius. Yeah. Who would do something like that? Like if Loris, for example, was on a milk cart after season one.
So aware and clever.
We should have got a lot more props for that.
We really do. Hey, you know what? It's coming back out on Shudder, so maybe we will.
Eagle-eyed fans, look out for all those Easter eggs.
Let's do an Easter egg hunt for the season 2 and 3.
That's so cute.
Let's do it for Easter and see if people can pick up on that.
That's a stroke of genius.
I won't get any credit for it, just like the milk carton.
I did really, really love when they go into the basement, because they allude to what is in the cellar. One of the first things that happens in the movie is, Sheriff, you got to come see this. You know, it's a horror show down there. We don't get to see. Okay, well, what's down there? Then Jenna Ortega gets pushed out. Oh, go see what's in my workshop. She goes down, but keeps all the lights off, grabs the flashlight, comes back up. And it isn't until her second time down that she shines the light and is looking around. And then I feel like the movie fully blossoms into, like, this is a Texas Chainsaw Massacre nightmare.
Yep.
And what I really loved is she's passing the flashlight over, and the items she passes are all homages. Like, there's the wheelchair from the grandfather character, and there's the hammer that she picks up, which is the weapon from the movie. And then I was just like, oh my God, this is truly, truly a film that I love.
Well, keep going, because she finds a little hand axe, and then she like busts through the wall.
Oh, for the Shining reference.
Totally the Shining. Now we're on a roll here. It just gives you everything you want. When someone peeks their eye through the hole, it gets pitchforked out.
Oh, I'm glad you guys talked about that. Granny Hags from Hell, no homages. No references. Don't even look, because they're not there.
There's also the sequel, Granny Hags from Hell 2, no homage.
Wow.
You just got to drool and buck your teeth out and eat popcorn and just yuck it up when you watch Granny Hags from Hell.
So me in my bunk.
Just get super high. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
You know what, everyone? Go watch X. It's totally worth it.
All right, my fellow granny hags from hell, that's it for this episode's Creature Feature Movie Review. Watching movies with you all at home is such horrible fun, and we'll be announcing the next movie we'll be reviewing soon on Twitter, so stay tuned and watch along with us before the next episode. We'll be right back.
Calling all misfits, mutants, and outcasts. The Boulay Brothers Dragula Season 4 U.S. Tour will be terrorizing a city near you this spring, featuring the Boulay Brothers and the top four monsters of Season 4. Tickets and VIP upgrades are available and going fast, so if you'd like the chance to experience the Dragula show live, get your tickets now at DragulaLive.com before they're all gone.
Welcome back, darlings. Pour yourself a drink and get cozy, because it's time to dig into our mailbox and answer all of your listener questions. Ian, will you do the honors?
Oh, it would be my pleasure.
Yes.
Mama brought the Foley today.
Special effects.
Adam from Nashville writes, my question I have for all three of you is, out of all the comic book characters you have read or heard about, which character do you believe that you relate to most?
I'll say Mystique.
Ooh, yes.
Fashionable, exotic, an outsider.
Interesting.
Well adaptive, secretive, beautiful.
Yes, motherfucking ma'am.
Okay.
Oh, and deadly as fuck.
Oh, right. Don't forget deadly.
How about you?
Well, unfortunately, I live in the gutter like 100% of the time. So when it was like, what comic book character? I was like, oh, that I most like want to like, you know, have sex with. Okay. So the first character I thought of was Venom, because Venom is just so cool. I think the Venom storyline where Eddie Brock and Venom sort of have this toxic symbiotic relationship is really sad and beautiful in a way. Like, I think Venom is fabulous, and there's also not a Venom who I wouldn't, you know.
When you were saying when you were saying this like toxic symbiotic like relationship, I thought you were literally talking about some of your boyfriends that I've known.
Ooh, just the one.
It's the tongue, isn't it?
Oh, it's the tongue. And she big too. Ooh, girl.
You know, I have different moods. It depends on what my mood is that day, what comic book character I relate to. So sometimes when we're on set for the Blade Brothers Dracula, I feel like Granny Goodness from Apocalypse.
That's a good one.
So I just feel that dark, you know? I do. She has her female furies and she abuses them and trains them and whatever.
Yeah, it's perfect.
And then if I'm feeling mysterious, maybe I feel like Black Orchid or someone like that, right? If I feel like being quiet that day. Oh. Yeah. Or if I'm pissed, I feel like the Enchantress.
Oh, okay.
Well, I have a little Enchantress DNA when
you
I'm pissed. No, I definitely
are
do.
The Enchantress. So if you have never read the Suicide Squad comic, definitely do, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And those are my three references.
That's a good one.
Okay, I do have one last one. When we wrap a season and we're just getting ready to release or the cast reveal comes out, I'm very plugged into everyone's social media profiles because, you know, I just have to keep tabs on all my ghoulies and I literally feel like Madam Web. I'm like in the chair, eyes closed, prophetess blind. I'm like, totally. Don't, no one talk to me. I'm watching with my girls.
So good.
And now you have all these acolytes doing it too, reporting back to
totally.
You.
Totally. Kendall writes, I adore y'all, and all that you represent so fiercely in the world of drag, filth, horror, and glamour. Currently homesick with COVID because fuck my life, but I'm watching a Netflix documentary called The Queen about a drag pageant in 1967. I'm curious to know your thoughts on this, whether it resonates with any of y'all's experience in the more recent years of the drag scene.
I'm familiar with this because I came across The Queen many years ago, and there's a very legendary scene featuring Crystal LaBeija. She's in a local pageant, and her friend tells her to go, and she doesn't win, and this young kind of like white girl named Harlow wins, and it's just, it's cool to see a little keyhole into this world, and to also be reminded that this kind of queer culture has been around since like the 60s. Mm-hmm. Like pageantry and competition and drag and all of these things that we think of as like modern kind of like facets of our queer culture. No, no, ma'am. This goes like way back and way further back than that. So anyone who hasn't seen The Queen, it is super spicy, very fun and kind of like deadly to watch. It's so cool. Definitely check it out.
Are you going to give us one of your favorite lines?
I didn't say she wasn't looking beautiful, but she wasn't looking beautiful tonight. Look at her makeup. It's terrible.
Aaron asks, I'm rewatching season 4 of the Boulay Brothers Dracula, and I have a theory. Is Swan the one who says drag, filth, horror, and glamour in the theme song? I could swear that's her mouth in the close-up.
Well, you have eagle eyes, darling, because it is my mouth in the close-up on the theme song.
Zach from Minnesota asks, I was catching up with the podcast and about died when I heard Drac mention watching Darcy and Stacey when she needed something stupid to watch. I am dying to know if the Boulays follow the 90-day cinematic universe, and if so, which are their favorite couples?
Well, pull up a chair because yes, it's buddy. Time to talk. 90 Day Fiancé is the show that will bring all communities together, and I'm going to tell you why. Talking to our agent the other day, who fell out of his seat about how amazing he thought it was, him and his wife watch it. I was talking to my parents, who are going off about it. So everybody watches this show.
It's brilliant. And we are totally sucked into the entire cinematic universe. I mean, going back season after season, the offshoots, like before the 90 days, after the 90 days, during the 90 days, in the U.S.,
it
overseas.
It started with the one where Paul had to go over
to Carini.
To Carini.
Yes, in Brazil.
That, to me, was like amazing reality TV. When he ran away into the woods and people were shooting at him,
yeah,
and
someone tried
the camera
to, like,
crew got robbed. I was like, I love this
cell
show.
Phone. Amazing.
That is the kind of reality TV that I love. Like, I'm not into other reality shows. That show, to me, back in the day, was very real. Larissa...
Oh,
and Debbie,
so legendary.
Amazing, right? Who are some of our favorites? Angela was great, but I don't know. She got Angela and Michael.
Yeah.
But they got kind of weird. Although when Angela got out and tried to fist fight people in Africa, I thought that was amazing.
Amazing. The cake to the face, wow. Also amazing. Yeah. Like, y'all trying to seduce me again with cake. It worked the first time, but it ain't going to work the second time, Michael.
Just love truly stupid TV like that.
Totally.
I think they did a great job.
And then there was that one where that guy, he was from like Seattle and he went down, he dated that like... girl from South America. She lived in that like beach community and she treated him like
oh
shit and he
God.
Loved it.
He had like a humiliation fetish
he
or something.
He loved it.
They're strange birds. But we have stopped watching it since then because it really started to get repetitive and yeah. I don't know. It lost its magic. It was like it burned hot and bright and then it faded just as quickly.
I mean, Darcy's season was amazing. I mean, Darcy is like gold. It's no wonder
gold.
That she has a spinoff, like spinoff after spinoff.
Angie from Vancouver asks, do you always do your own makeup? If so, what is your favorite makeup brand or brands?
Yes, we do, and we're proud of it. I mean, you know what? I think you should be proud of it. A lot of yeah. people, when they go on to do TV shows, they don't do their makeup anymore. And I am a firm believer that if you're going to be a judge of drag, you had better get your hands dirty in drag. And not only that, don't be some weird ancient that paints your face a certain way and gets stuck that way forever. You have to continue...
To grow
to
and
grow
change
and
be
challenge yourself
yeah.
and try new things and do different things and learn what the new tools are, or else you really don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly. I'm trying to think, what are the TV sticks that we use?
Krylon.
Yeah, we use a lot of Krylon. We use...
I know everyone hates Kat Von D or that she's canceled. Something's wrong with her. I don't know, but her lipstick is great. I don't
and
know.
So is her
That's
highlight. Yeah.
The highlighter, which the Metal Crush is amazing, oh. which they, everyone knows. I love the highlighter.
Can't even get it anymore.
You can't get it anymore, so unfortunately. I think she sold her company and is only doing music now.
What are the shadows that we get?
I would have bought all of her highlighter and she would have never had to sell her business.
Could have bought her a second mansion.
I don't know. I don't think we use anything too crazy, honestly.
Inglot, occasionally Makeup Forever. Yeah, I think those are generally the brands we use.
There is, I will say this, a black lipstick is hard to come by, but we have found one, and it's made by Black Moon. Black Moon,
yeah.
Yeah,
and it is the best, truest
it's the only,
black there is.
But it kind of makes you hungry because for some reason it has like a scent of like cookies or brownies. Very strange side effect.
Juan from Virginia asks, I wanted to ask if you all could release some snippets from the season 4 audition tapes that stood out and what were your favorite moments. What part from each monster was your favorite from their audition tape?
From season 4 specifically, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we showed some highlights. I thought like Mary Cherry crying when she got cast was really endearing. Mm-hmm. Zava did some
crazy stuff
that
real filth.
That was yeah. the filthiest of filth.
Betty's had some really campy moments and really fun, like risk taking that I loved.
Yeah, Betty's was fun.
Astrid's was really impressive.
Yeah, Astrid showed all the musical instruments that she played and all that stuff. I don't know. I mean, all of them were really good, obviously, or else we wouldn't cast them, right?
Well. Ryan from Manchester writes, I would just like to say a massive thank you for the show you put on in Manchester. It was easily the best show I had ever seen. The question is this. During the meet and greet, Drac noticed my Hammer Film Productions t-shirt and asked which was my favorite, The Nanny, starring Bette Davis. Do you guys, ooh, handsome Ian included, have a favorite Hammer horror movie?
I'd say right now, I'm not sure if it's our favorite, but I think it's the one that's influencing us the most right now, which is The Mummy, a classic. Mm-hmm. And it actually affected our shows and performances that we took on tour, because a lot of it, as you saw, was kind of like Mummy inspired. Mm-hmm. And there was some footage from an older Mummy movie.
Yeah. And I have not seen, there's a couple other Mummy movies that they made after the first one. There's a whole series. There's like 5 of them. And I have not watched them, but I plan on watching them.
Handsome Ian?
Handsome Ian is going to go with a very, very millennial pick because she's on my mind. We reviewed it for the pod, but The Lodge is also a Hammer Films production. They're now making new films, and it stars Riley Keough. And Riley Keough is on my mind because I just watched something called At Zola, and it was nuts. Anyway, so I'm going to go with The Lodge.
I would love to make a Hammer horror film.
Let's just put it out there.
Oh, yeah, manifest.
Yes, that is going to be the studio that greenlights Granny Hags from Hell.
Yes. Oh, that is, I feel like that is right up Hammer film.
That's all the time we have for questions this episode. Thank you all for writing in. And remember, if you have questions for us that you would like answered here on the podcast, please email us at creatures@BouletBrothersDragula.com and let us know where you're writing from. We would love to hear from you.
Now, it's time to change the mood a little and bring down the lights as we prepare for this episode's haunting of history. For this section of the show, we like to dig up a real-life, documented supernatural happening and give listeners an abridged history of the terrifying event. We encourage you to turn off the lights, find a dark, quiet place to relax in, and prepare for a journey into the unknown.
On the evening of November 16, 1957, the small town of Plainfield, Wisconsin, would be rocked by a crime so heinous that its perpetrator would become synonymous with fear itself, shocking the nation and inspiring the legacies of horror icons in film and television throughout the decades to follow. Known as the Butcher of Plainfield, or the Plainfield Ghoul, Ed Gein confessed to the murders of two women and was suspected of countless additional murders after the remains of at least 15 different female bodies were found in his home. The grisly story quickly became national news, gracing both the covers of Life and Time magazine that year, and would go on to inspire some of horror's greatest film achievements, including Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, The Silence of the Lambs, and perhaps most importantly, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. When the Plainfield hardware store failed to open on the morning of November 16, 1957, Deputy Sheriff Frank Warden went to investigate the matter, fueled in part by the disappearance of the store's owner, Deputy Sheriff Warden's mother, Bernice Warden. Upon entering the unlocked establishment, Warden noticed the cash register had been left open and a pool of blood had gathered, leaving a blood-stained trail leading to the store's back door. Warden informed investigators that Ed Gein was the last customer in the hardware store the night prior, and that Gein had made an appointment to return the next morning to purchase a gallon of antifreeze. With this lead, police headed to search Gein's residence, where they would discover a scene so gruesome it would become known nationwide as Ed Gein's House of Horrors. According to various reports and court documents, Plainfield police walked into a scene ripped directly from a living nightmare. Human remains adorned nearly every surface of the home, with ghoulish mementos and gory carnage decorating the furniture and walls as investigators searched the home in an attempt to make sense of the carnage throughout. Amongst the horrifying tableaus were skulls in various states of destruction, some with the top sawn off, the remaining material made into bowls for eating and drinking, while others were simply placed atop Gein's bedposts. Whole human bones strewn about the floor and surfaces, and an array of human skin coverings for the furniture in the home, all dimly bathed in the light from a lamp, complete with a lampshade made from the skin of a human face. In addition to these macabre home goods selections, investigators found several pieces of human skin clothing, including a corset made from a female torso, leggings made from the skin of multiple human legs, and most notably, masks made from the severed faces of female corpses. Investigators would ultimately analyze the remains of 15 different unidentified bodies inside the House of Horrors, in addition to the mutilated remains of Bernice Warden found hanging from the rafters in a shed behind Gein's home. Following his arrest, Ed Gein confessed to the murder of Bernice Warden, as well as Mary Hogan, another Plainfield woman who had gone missing 3 years earlier. While the number of victims murdered by Gein is unknown to this day, Gein is suspected to have been involved with several missing persons cases from around that time, due in part to the sheer number of unique human remains found in his home, although the number has never been confirmed. In order to satiate a growing curiosity and obsession with female anatomy following his mother's death, Gein admitted to grave-robbing cemeteries in the Wisconsin area near Plainfield, digging up female corpses and using their body parts to experiment with human taxidermy, with the ultimate goal of creating a full suit of women's flesh to literally take on the form of his dead mother. Although Gein was initially ruled mentally unfit to stand trial for his crimes, the grave robber and murderer was tried in the Washura County Court in 1958, where he was found guilty of the murder of Bernice Worden, but not guilty by reason of insanity on all other counts. After the verdict, Gein was sent to the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane in Waupun, Wisconsin, before being transferred to the Mendota State Hospital in Madison. While Gein awaited trial in March 1958, the Plainfield House of Horrors was burned to the ground in a suspected case of arson, although no official investigation was ever conducted into the cursed property's destruction. While the atrocities committed by Ed Gein would go on to inspire some of the arguably greatest films in the horror genre's modern history, the celebrity of the Plainfield Butcher began almost immediately following the discovery of the House of Horrors. At a public auction in 1958, Carnival Sideshow operator Bunny Gibbons purchased the 1949 Ford sedan that Gein had been driving the day of Bernice Worden's murder and began charging a 25-cent admission fee to view the vehicle, newly dubbed as the Ed Gein Ghoul Car, the car that hauled the dead from their graves. 2 years later, Alfred Hitchcock's classic 1960 film Psycho would be loosely inspired by Ed Gein's crimes, and, as a response to the film's lack of on-screen violence, low-budget film director Herschel Gordon Lewis would go on to pioneer the horror subgenre of splatter films, claiming the title of the Godfather of Gore in modern cinema. In 1974, however, director Tobe Hooper would be the first to truly bring a vision of Ed Gein to life with the release of The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, featuring a killer who inherited much of Gein's blood-soaked history and a special affinity for masks made of human flesh. Since the release of The Texas Chainsaw Massacre in 1974, Leatherface has joined the pantheon of horror icons and has perhaps transcended the gruesome crimes that inspired his origin, with numerous sequels, remakes, and reboots pushing the character to an almost inhuman stature. Ed Gein spent his remaining years in the Mendota State Prison until his death in 1984 due to lung cancer, at which point he was buried in the Plainfield Cemetery, the very place that Gein would dig up his posthumous victims to satiate his grisly pursuits. Throughout history, horror fans and true crime lovers have been obsessed with the violent acts that inspire some of our favorite films. But as with the case of the Plainfield Butcher in his House of Horrors, the reality of this horrific crime is more haunting than the films it continues to inspire to this day. With his death, the Plainfield Ghoul would ultimately prove himself to be nothing more than an evil human being, rather than the nigh-unkillable chainsaw-wielding monster that horror fans have grown to cheer for and fear in equal measure.
That's all the time we have for now, children. If you're enjoying the Boulay Brothers Creatures of the Night, we want to remind you to give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and to also encourage everyone you know to do the same. We'll see you back here on the next episode of Dread Central's Boulay Brothers Creatures of the Night. Thanks for listening. The Boulay Brothers Creatures of the Night is a Dread Central production, hosted by the Boulay Brothers with their co-host and producer, Ian DeVogler. Engineered and mixed by Carlos Bueno, with music by Neuron Spector.